www.newsmakers.org.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Neil Borofsky, the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program.
One of TARP's goals was, of course, to rescue the financial system and to restore the profitability of the largest banks so that they can continue to do business. On the other hand, TARP was supposed to do a lot more than just that. It was supposed to help preserve home ownerships. It was supposed to help assist in the recovery. It was supposed to help restore lending. And there, the program has simply not been successful, but has failed.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
We have Colleen Kelly, who is president of the National Treasury Employees Union, who's going to talk about the shutdown, the fret du jour. We're going to have an update about John Gage and the American Federation of Government Employees, what they're doing today all over the country. And then we'll go to Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, senior federal writer, for sort of an overview as to what's happening. And there's so much going on. Colleen, are you with us?
I am, Mike.
Listen, I know you are extremely busy today of all days, but thank you for taking time out.
My pleasure.
Julia Ziegler said she, when she had you on the line, she said, Colleen is ready to go. And I said, Colleen is always ready to go. but now of all times, what do you make of this? If you were a Las Vegas bookmaker, odds maker, what would be your odds on a government shutdown?
You know, everybody keeps asking that question of everybody. The only one I've ever heard give a number, and that was about a week ago, was Chris Van Hollen said 50-50.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think as time passes, there's more concern and there's less certainty and just a lot of frustration on the part of federal employees.
Well, you know, everybody's proceeding with the fact that this would be either bad or disastrous, and that it's a bad thing. But do you think there are people who are hoping there is a shutdown?
I think some of the politicians are hoping there is a shutdown if they can make sure that the other side gets blamed. That's really all this is about. And I think, you know, for the public and for federal employees, the point that we have to stay focused on is that this shutdown is as devastating as it would be, and it would be, to the country. This is the short-term issue. The longer-term issue is ensuring that whatever spending bills are passed are appropriate to be able to fund the government to provide the services that the American public depend on every day. That's really the, you know, what's at risk here.
Well, two of the, I guess, the most important agencies to federal to the members of the public are the Internal Revenue Service, and you represent a large chunk of the IRS employees, and Social Security Administration. What's going to happen because you guys, as I understand it, are in the dark as to who's going to be declared essential and who's not?
Yes, the agencies have not released that information to the unions or to employees. Employees do not know if they would be working on Monday if there is a shutdown or not. And when it comes to agencies like the IRS, while we don't have specifics, what we do know is that, of course, we are right now at the peak season of the filing season, where every American who's trying to be compliant with their tax responsibilities is either filing their tax return or waiting for a tax refund. And that whole process would slow down. We have never had a government shutdown in the middle of filing season before. And the commissioner of the IRS has made very clear in testimony just in the last week that it would have a devastating effect on the IRS's ability to do their work, in addition to greatly reducing taxpayer services and tax refunds during that time. It would also cause a loss of revenue by over $4 billion in government revenue alone. And that's because the IRS is the agency who collects the revenue that literally funds the rest of government. And that is a piece that is often lost in these conversations.
So they're saying that $4 billion?
$4 billion.
Would be, if not lost, certainly delayed in being collected, huh?
No, it would be lost because of budget cut. The $4 billion, let me be clear, would be lost if the budget cuts that are being proposed become part of a spending bill. Because for every $1 the IRS spends, they bring in $5. So if $1 billion is cut from their budget, if $1 billion is cut from their budget, then $5 billion is added to the debt, because that will be revenue lost.
Okay, and I would assume that human beings being what we are, that people who were due refunds or thought they were probably filed early and are in a waiting stage, and people who think they're going to owe or know they're going to owe are going to wait until the exact last minute to get that painful process done. So do you have any estimate as to how many people have refund checks somewhere in the pipeline now?
I don't know those kinds of numbers, Mike. What I do know is that according to the IRS, 20 to 25% of taxpayers file their returns in the last 2 weeks, which is where we are right now. And they also request extensions if they're not yet ready to file. And you're right, some of those surely are those who may have to make a tax payment. But I know from talking to a lot of people, they just wait till the last minute. And even if they're getting a refund, they wait till the last minute, and then they just hope that it will be, you know, processed pretty quickly. And anything everything about processing would be slowed down if there were a shutdown.
The last big shutdown we had was the winter of 95-96, and that was, I got a couple of emails from IRS employees this morning and yesterday, and one who said he was a survivor of the shutdown said that he and most of his colleagues were told they were not essential and they did not work. But, of course, that was the winter of 95 and 96. As you say now, we're in prime tax filing time.
Yes. And so whether those numbers will change or not, we don't know. But what we do know is that they are correct that back in 95, in the first shutdown, the IRS employees did not work. Now, in the second shutdown, which was the longer one, the spending bill for IRS had been passed. So IRS was not impacted by the second shutdown in 96.
And that's interesting. It wasn't because somebody's deemed IRS essential. It was because their budget, it was actually approved, huh?
Yes, in the second one.
That's amazing. Yes. The biggest profit maker you have to shut it down. That doesn't make sense.
And it funds, as I said, the revenue that the IRS collects based on the laws that Congress passes is the revenue that funds all of the other agencies. And in addition to the IRS and the filing season, of course, if everyone were to just think about the things that won't be done, if a place like Food and Nutrition Services shuts down, that's the agency that administers school lunches, sometimes the only solid meal that children receive. That program could be shut down. Nuclear Regulatory Commission inspects nuclear power plants and regulates nuclear materials. The Food and Drug Administration inspects food, drugs, and medical devices, and they would not be able to do that. Things that the American public expects the government to do every day, those basic things could not be done.
Well, the late-night comedy shows, every time there's a threat of a shutdown, or even in the 95-96 one, they would have a field day with the fact that the government shut down and nobody knew about it. Ha, ha, ha. But they would know very quickly, wouldn't they?
Well, they would, depending on who is working and the numbers that are designated essential. But the whole point of the shutdown would be that my expectation is that very few employees would be working, that hundreds of thousands of federal employees would not be on the job doing what it is that they want to do, the services they want to provide to the American public that they know are critical to the country. And that's what federal employees want. They want to do their jobs. They want to work.
Well, you know, without hyping this, it's hard not to, because everybody seems to be doing it for whatever reason. But I, as a taxpayer and as a flyer, I don't want the FAA to shut down some of its operations and throw more of a burden on controllers. I don't want them any more stressed out than they already are.
Oh, I agree with you. again, there are things, like you said, Mike, that you take for granted. Somebody going to an airport to fly would think about that. Maybe they wouldn't think about it last week, but the day they're going to the airport, they're going to think about that. Or if they're coming into any port of entry across the country from an overseas flight or leaving the country, that's the kind of security and inspection you want to make sure is in place. NTU is doing everything that we can to influence those and to convince those who need to make this, make this compromise and to make it work. We did a federal employee call-in day yesterday, where federal employees from across the country were calling their members of Congress, urging them to reach a compromise and to come up with a budget, a spending bill that will fund fairly and reasonably the agencies to be able to deliver on their critical missions. And we had a very successful day with thousands of employees making these calls and talking to their elected representatives. And we've also set up a webpage for our members, www.nteu.org/shutdown, to keep them informed about the government shutdown information. And we're launching text messaging services and a lot of communications, because the communication to date, candidly, to employees has not been that great.
Well, it's difficult not to compare the possible upcoming shutdown with the one of 95 and 96. And as the Federal Times wisely pointed out, the government has changed dramatically since then because of 9/11. You have a larger percentage of people who are involved in homeland security, health safety, and that sort of thing. But that said, the country is in a different economic situation now. And I want to ask you about that, the impact on federal workers, when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
So, if there were a government shutdown, how would the men and women in uniform be paid? Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell said late yesterday the leadership hasn't figured that out yet. There are 146,000 service members in Afghanistan and in Iraq. He says the Pentagon would continue key national security responsibilities, including both of those wars, and continuing operations in Libya and in Japan. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine being responsible for the electronic security of up to 1 billion barrels of emergency crude oil stored in salt caverns as deep as 4,000 feet? Airink can. Their advanced information management platform protects over $80 billion worth of crude oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The stockpile is so important to our national security that there's only one person in the world who can authorize its drawdown. For more information, log on to ARINC.com.
Why does a waiting room have to feel like a waiting room? And does a stress test have to be so stressful? At Kaiser Permanente, we don't think it does, and we've made the changes to prove it. With brand new state-of-the-art facilities opening all around the Mid-Atlantic, like the Kaiser Permanente Capitol Hill Medical Center, we're poised to become the leader in healthcare for the D.C. and Baltimore area. With easier access to primary and specialty care, full-service radiology, lab tests, and pharmacy services, we're offering more choices than ever before. Our staff of top-notch physicians is growing by more than 200, providing greater access to care. And our innovative electronic medical records allow members to view their own medical history 24/7. Plus, members can email their doctor's office, check most lab results, refill prescriptions, and even choose their primary care and OBGYN all online. The future in healthier care is already here. Find it at kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And switch your existing system to Ackerman at no cost and get a great $18.95 rate. Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. You want fast response, you want Ackerman. Get 3 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
We need to explore that cave, Sergeant.
Sir, the opening's too small. I can't get a man in there, sir.
I'll go.
Who are you?
I'm Sug V, the robot for the infantry, sir.
A robot for infantry?
Yes, sir. I'm small, light, and versatile. A tool that can protect every squad, especially when dealing with the tough conditions in Afghanistan.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get in there, Sug V.
Yes, sir.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops, saving lives, making a difference. iRobot.
If you're an engineer employed in a technology-oriented enterprise or the government, consider attending UMBC's lunchtime info session on graduate programs in engineering management and systems engineering, Wednesday, April 13th, 12 noon, on the UMBC campus in Catonsville, Maryland. Learn how these programs can help maximize your technical, managerial, and business skills in the field of engineering. Register online today at umbc.edu/engm.
Are you an IT leader, a change agent? Then the Green IT and Cloud Computing Summit, April 20th and 21st at the Ritz-Carlton Tyson's Corner, is an event you shouldn't miss. Hear from top government leaders and private industry experts as they discuss real-world projects. Network with thought leaders and decision-makers to better understand the green IT and cloud computing opportunities emerging in federal, state, and local governments. And leave with actionable ideas, advice, and a network of experts. That's the Green IT and Cloud Computing Summit, April 20th and 21st. For more information, visit greenitdc.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Colleen Kelly. She is the president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Colleen, before the break, we were talking about obviously the shutdown or the potential for the shutdown, and the comparisons are hard to avoid between the 1995-96 one and the current one, although there are numerous differences. Timing, as you pointed out, is everything. This is happening during the tax filing season, among other things, and that's a frightening thought if for people who have possibly a refund in the pipeline. During the last shutdown, the first one in 95 was involved 800,000 people. That was followed quickly by another that it took in 330,000 people. Many came out of it because their budgets had been approved. But I'm thinking back in those days, there was no housing flap. Your thrift savings plan accounts were paying 20% and 30%. I mean, people grumbled if their TSP was making less than 20%. And then we've had the recession that hit us, and so many people's houses are underwater now. My feeling, gut feeling, can't prove it, is that more federal workers are financially close to disaster and have homes that are underwater than were during the last shutdown.
Well, I think federal employees are in the same situation as the rest of the country. They're pretty close to a mirror image of that. And there are many federal employees who, just like so many other Americans, are living paycheck to paycheck. So absolutely there is a concern about that, from a family perspective.
Yeah, well, Colleen, other things, as if there wasn't enough, it's hard to be to maintain a hype-free zone these days. What about this proposal to freeze federal pay for 5 years? How serious is that?
Well, I think from the author of it, he's made clear that he's very serious about not only that, but all of the other cuts to federal spending and federal benefits. And he's made clear that what he wants to do with that money is to give a tax cut again to the wealthiest Americans in the country. I mean, he's made that very clear, and I think each of them standing on their own are appalling. But when you put them together and make clear that that's what they want to do with the money, it's just absolutely appalling. And of course, NTU is doing and will continue to do everything we can to oppose those outrageous proposals, but they're coming.
This is hard to deal with, and again, hard to not hype, but. What are you telling your staff, and what are you telling your people about this?
We're telling them that this is very real, that these attacks will be nonstop, that there is no basis for it from a as far as what federal employees deserve or how they should be treated for the outstanding work they do every day for the American public, that this is about politics, and it's about the Republican Party and, in particular, the Tea Party element of it that are putting forward these ridiculous proposals that, first and foremost, what they do is they always target a number. What they never are willing to deal with is what the impact of that number would be on the country and on the American public from the standpoint of the services that they need and expect from the federal government. They never are willing to have that conversation all as one. All they want to do is focus on a number and to dismantle the federal government, to downsize federal agencies. You know, it's just a political position that they have. I, of course, believe that it is not based on any fact. I think most of them probably have no clue what these agencies do and how critical the work that the frontline federal employees do.
They may be about to find out, huh?
Yeah, they
Colleen,
may be.
Listen, thank you so much for taking your valuable time to be with us, and we'll talk to you again soon. And good luck to all of us.
Thank you, Mike.
We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The largest tax increase in American history takes place on January 1st, 2013. This is Steve Burton with Equity One inviting you to our tax-free retirement dinner seminar on Wednesday, April the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner. Call 1-877-313-4080 to RSVP. Income and capital gains taxes are going up. Estate taxes are making a comeback. Taxes are on sale, and learn how to protect your assets. Call 1-877-313-4080 to join us on Wednesday, April the 20th at Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner. You must be a homeowner and have a retirement account to attend. Call 1-877-313-4080. You can also register online at EquityOneInc.com. That's Equity, the number one, Inc.com. Call 1-877-313-4080.
Here's Sharon Wall, Regional Commissioner, FASGSA Telework Program Office, on the Federal Executive Forum on Telework Coop and the role of video conferencing, sponsored by LifeSize.
Work is what you do. It's not where you are. So I think that we're going to enable a much more agile, mobile, flexible workforce that is innovative, that we create the transparency that the American people are looking for.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
LifeSize, a division of Logitech, brings unprecedented HD video conferencing solutions to the federal government. According to a Gartner report, LifeSize costs up to three times less than Cisco, Tandberg, and Polycom, while also providing the lowest TCO. To learn how your agency can have two to four times the HD video performance of other vendors, download their white paper today, dispelling the myths of HD video conferencing at LifeSize.com. That's LifeSize.com.
David Aguilar, Deputy Commissioner from U.S. Customs and Border Protection, commented during the panel discussion, Global Illicit Supply Chains, Protecting Citizens and International Borders.
This country imports over $2 trillion worth of merchandise on a yearly basis. We export over $1.8 million worth of merchandise. Embedded within those legal supply chains is where the illicit supply chains try to basically hide.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Criminal organizations develop and utilize increasingly sophisticated supply chains to move contraband across global networks. To help combat the global problem of illicit supply chains, Booz Allen Hamilton's strategy and technology consultants are working closely with U.S. intelligence, law enforcement, and other agencies charged with slowing or preventing illegal trafficking, leveraging holistic and comprehensive supply chain attack strategies to help curb the flow of illegal guns, drugs, finances, cybercrime, and people. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at BoozAllen.com/expertvoices.
For more than 30 years, FLIR Systems has provided customers with trusted support needed in critical missions. With a full spectrum of products designed to enhance perception and awareness, FLIR's threat detection systems are used by civilian and government agencies around the world. FLIR now provides comprehensive radiation detection and identification for threat detection, disaster preparedness, and emergency management, such as the ongoing crisis in Japan. For more information, visit FLIR.com/detection.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
My unit needs to be able to transmit critical information quickly and reliably while deployed. We must have the flexibility to deploy mobile forces fast as we adapt to changing conditions in our environment. Only satellite can support real-time communications everywhere in the field, whether in the air, on the ground, or at sea.
Hughes provides advanced communications on-the-move solutions with global coverage. Our solutions meet U.S. government security requirements, including FIPS and TRANSEC, and operate on multiple bands and waveforms. Hughes products comply with open commercial standards, enabling easy integration with existing systems. Our team of highly skilled and cleared engineers stands ready to work with you to meet your mission requirements.
To learn more about Hughes Technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I just spoke earlier with Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, and we invited John Gage, president of the American Federation of Government Employees Union, to be on, and he could not because they are having AFGE is staging demonstrations in front of Social Security offices today, and he had to go up to Baltimore for the headquarters to handle that. But John Gage did speak at the National Press Club yesterday, and he said that this is a sham. This is a hoax. It's a political gimmick, the shutdown to get attention and to hurt the government. And he said maybe a shutdown would be a good thing because it would let people, and particularly the Congress, know what government workers really do when they're not allowed to do it. My guests now are Steve Watkins, who's editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times. And guys, I don't know where to begin.
Either. Yesterday we were posting stories throughout the day, and as part of my job is to, of course, edit them and then put the headlines on and figure out where on the website they're going to go. And I'll tell you, it was like one blow after the next, and every one just portended bad news.
I think of us. I see sometimes in these African wildlife scenes a cheetah running through a herd of a million antelopes, and you don't know where to jump, where to stop, whom to bite. I'm looking at the front page of the Federal Times. This was the online version, and you may have updated it since an hour ago. But you've got House GOP prepares for a government shutdown. Key lawmaker wants to bring pay-for-performance to feds. Treasury may borrow federal retirement funds in debt emergency. Government shutdown would have limited impact on Congress. And then you've got a picture of the president of the National Federation of Federal Employees, and he's making an appeal to the administration to tell people what is likely to happen if there is a government shutdown. Not only let the employees know, but let the public know.
Right. Yeah, the unions are extremely aggravated with the administration, and they have been for a number of weeks. They're getting no information about how their members are going to be affected, and most federal employees have no idea, and they probably won't have any idea until Friday, probably late in the day, if it still looks like a shutdown is imminent.
Because in shutdowns in the past, people have been ordered to come into work only to get their orders to go home. That's happened, hasn't it?
And it could happen again. There's some talk that some unions have been told that some employees may have to come in on Monday morning just so they can say, okay, you're essential. Or, I'm sorry, you're accepted. You're not. Go home and wait for further instructions. So that's just kind of piling on. Some unions feel that's piling on insult to injury to have them come in just to be told to turn around and go home.
Right. But, of course, if they can't tell them that on Friday, then they'd be legally obligated to bring them in to officially tell them to go home.
Yeah. Some of the unions are trying to put together a communications network to keep their members informed. I'm not sure if Colleen mentioned this, but they were talking about some are gathering cell phone numbers to send text messages, home email addresses, that sort of thing. So there's kind of informal information networks being built up to keep people informed during this.
Well, it interests me that the unions, and of course the unions, I guess to a union, supported President Obama in the last election and were very vocal about it. Now they're not happy with some things, but they are still blaming the Republicans in Congress and the Tea Party Republicans in particular in the House. They say they want this confrontation. They're going after agencies like EPA and National Public Radio and various other things. They're doing this on purpose and setting it up. I guess some people could make the argument, too, that the administration may be playing the fear of the unknown game by putting a lid on telling agencies that they can't tell the public or even their own employees what is likely to be shut down. For instance, if you're planning a vacation to Yellowstone National Park, do you dare go? Do you cancel your reservations? What do you think? They're both sides have blame in this thing.
both sides, meaning
The administration and the Republican Congress.
Well, I think yeah, of course, and I think that's how the American public is looking at it. If you look at surveys, it was interesting. The Washington Post had a survey just the other day, and it was split right down the middle. 37% said they would blame the Obama administration and the Democrats, and 37% said they'd blame the Republicans. And what's interesting to me is that there's this stalemate, and I can't imagine why. I have to say, on the Republican side, why are they taking a stand on, you know, basically what is, in essence, a minuscule fraction of the deficit spending, and amid this survey, I've got to think that there's some calculation that their position is being viewed more favorably. But it's, you know, basically that's what we're talking about here is, let's say, a few tens of billions of dollars in the scheme of the deficit and the debt. That's really peanuts, and most people understand and acknowledge that. The bigger fight here is going to be on resuming the debt ceiling, extending the debt ceiling, and the 2012 budget, and we've already seen the first foray on the 2012 budget from the House Budget Committee, Paul Ryan, which outlines a number of big reforms and changes that would affect federal employees, of course, and federal agencies, but also the country as a whole. I think there's a frustration out there, not only amongst federal employees, certainly, but the broader American public, that really we just need to get beyond this shutdown fear and threat and move ahead.
Well, you guys, I believe, had a key interview with an important committee chairman this week, didn't you?
Yeah, we talked with Congressman Dennis Ross, a freshman from Florida, and he basically is, I think, would be considered from the Tea Party wing of the freshman crop of Republicans. He's chairman of the Federal Personnel Subcommittee, the Workforce Subcommittee, which obviously is very important to our audience and your audience. And he is on record as wanting to essentially dismantle the general schedule personnel system and put in its place a new market-based pay-for-performance type pay system. And so Steve and I had a chance to sit down with him for a good amount of time and talk over the details, and it was pretty fascinating what he has in mind.
How would it differ from the National Security Personnel System? But, you know, that's the one that the Republicans brought in with the Bush administration. Unions spent 4 years fighting it. Finally, it was dropped after millions of dollars were spent training people to do it. People were transferred out, and then they were transferred back in and are being transferred back in. And so it's out. But it looks like he wants to bring something like that back.
Well, it's kind of interesting to see we haven't had a real good answer to that question, how his idea might differ from NSPS. He says that he's absolutely not looking at NSPS. He called it an abject failure. He says that's not what he's looking at. But we haven't seen a whole lot of details on what he's got in mind. He did say the other day that he is looking at the Postal Service's pay-for-performance system as a possible model. This is something that they put in place for postmasters, supervisors, and other administrative officers in 2003. Basically, under this system, postmasters and supervisors are graded on criteria like how much revenue their post office increases by, whether timely overnight deliveries exceed expectations, personal goals set by the supervisor, goals set by the post office or the facility, and the Postal Service's national goals all factor into whether these postal managers get their raises or not. And that's something that he says seems like a good plan. It seems to be working from what he understands, and it may indeed inform what he comes up with. Now, it's worth noting that while some of the postmasters and supervisors groups helped create this program back in 2003, they seem to have kind of soured on it a bit. They asked the Postal Inspector General to look into it late last summer, saying that some ratings were being manipulated to lower pay raises. The Inspector General is still looking into that. We should have a report by the end of next month. So that's kind of what he's looking at right now.
But and he's talking about the white collar workforce, the GS.
Yeah, he's talking about GS for now. We asked him if he's got other sections of the federal workforce plans that he's looking at, and he said not yet. Concentrating on GS right now, maybe others down the line, but for now, just GS.
Did you get a sense that he might want to test it out in one agency, say defense, or as opposed to going government wide?
I don't think we're there yet. I think this is still something that's very much in the formation period. I don't think he's thought that far ahead
so
yet.
So we're probably a year off from anything, huh?
He says. It's going to be a while before we see anything. He says maybe in the fall we might see a more definite plan, and then after that it's going to take a little while to work its way through Congress and start to get enacted. So we're a ways away from seeing this actually get enacted.
And we still have yet to hear from the administration itself, from the Office of Personnel Management. I think it was in December of a year ago that they outlined some major changes coming in the civil service, major overhauls, including a kind of a pay-for-performance thing and maybe eliminating grades, and that has not happened.
Yeah, John Barry at OPM has been noticeably quiet on the subject. It's a little odd because, as you say, he did kind of come out at the get-go talking a lot about the need for pay reform, and then pretty soon after stopped hearing anything. So there's an absence of chatter on that from OPM, and I think there's a calculation. This is just my reading of it, but a calculation that it's politically challenging. Obviously, the unions don't want to change anything.
Right. The things that he outlined at that closed door meeting were revolutionary, to say the least. You know, I have the feeling that if, and this may be true in other beats as well, but for those of us covering the federal beat, if it was a Rip Van Winkle effect where you went to sleep for 20 years and then came back, you would find yourself going over the same issues. You know, the shutdown, 10, 15 years past, the Internal Revenue Service first being required to hire and then being required to fire the junkyard dogs to collect taxes, the imposition of a pay-for-performance system, and then kicking it out, and then here it comes back again, and it may be in a different form.
Yeah, and, you know, you could see that with the general schedule. It's already more than 60 years old, and, you know, if you just look at it objectively, it's obvious that it is outdated, outmoded. OPM is strapped on all sorts of extra special pay categories for this occupation, that occupation. Locality pay has been added on. So it's basically a highly modified plan from when it first started, and I think that reflects the fact that it no longer really serves the government well.
Yeah, I wonder what you've been hearing from you guys get out a lot with interviews, but what you've been hearing from readers. Let me give you a couple things that I got. This person says, my agency's current pay period ends Saturday, April 9th. April 8th is my last scheduled work day for the pay period. The regular payday falls on next Friday, April 15th. If there is a shutdown anytime after the 8th, will I still be paid next Friday?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
The Office of Personnel Management's information they posted online said they're going to hold on to as many as few employees as they need to process the paychecks for the current pay period we're in, up until the time of the shutdown. They'll do the work they need to get those paychecks out, and then after that they'll furlough those employees. So yes, your paychecks for this week will come out.
Right, and same for retirees wanting to know if their annuity checks are in danger.
Yeah, your annuity checks will go out, or are highly expected to go out. That, a lot of that is automated, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Very good. Okay, and here's one that I hadn't thought of. says a large scientific conference is being held in D.C. from April 9th to the 13th. Many of my colleagues and I are registered to attend from out of town, some scheduled to present their research. Can we attend the conference as private citizens using the registration that the government already paid for if we are furloughed? If we can attend, do we have to modify our registration badges to eliminate any identification of our federal affiliation so we don't appear to be representing the government? Can those scheduled to present their research do so even though their research was funded by the government and conducted while employed by the government? Now, that sounds like a silly question, but it's a silly situation. Let me ask you for an answer, if there is one, when we come back on a break right here on WFED 1500 AM.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Tune in to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio 1500 AM, morning 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a connected world.
At Deloitte, we're helping government make a lasting impact in Americans' lives by addressing cybersecurity, financial reform, defense, energy, emerging markets, and healthcare. And we're hiring passionate professionals to help us get it done. You'll change lives and shape your future, helping government help America. See for yourself. Visit Deloitte.com/federalcareers. Equal opportunity employers.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
So, if there were a government shutdown, how would the men and women in uniform be paid? Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell said late yesterday the leadership hasn't figured that out yet. There are 146,000 service members in Afghanistan and in Iraq. He says the Pentagon would continue key national security responsibilities, including both of those wars, and continuing operations in Libya and in Japan. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine being responsible for the electronic security of up to 1 billion barrels of emergency crude oil stored in salt caverns as deep as 4,000 feet? Airink can. Their advanced information management platform protects over $80 billion worth of crude oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The stockpile is so important to our national security that there's only one person in the world who can authorize its drawdown. For more information, log on to ARINC.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Defense Logistics Agency handles most of the military's day-to-day purchasing, processing almost 11,000 contract actions per day. But as the agency took on new purchasing missions, their hodgepodge of legacy IT systems couldn't scale up to meet the challenge. This year, an enterprise procurement system dubbed e-procurement is beginning to take over and automate almost all the agency's contract writing and contract management. The system's been 10 years in the making.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
As gas prices rise, more focus will shift toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join FCEA Bethesda and FCEA Energy on May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, NOAA, and Interior to discuss energy efficiency, agency cooperation, and IT spending priorities. Register at FCEABethesda.com/EEITDay. Special thanks to premier sponsors Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Booz Allen Hamilton, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey and Steve Watkins of the Federal Times. And we've been discussing the primary topic du jour, the government shutdown. And guys, I gave you the longest question in history, but I think it deals with a lot of people. Big scientific conference here in D.C. from April 9th to the 13th. A lot of government people are coming in from out of town. A, can they still come? Do they have to come as private citizens? Can they use their government registration? Or do they have to pretend they're anonymous? Can they deliver their government research papers that were done on government time and funded by the government? And, you know, the broader question, I guess, is a lot of people who are in who are on a travel status. I mean, what if Uncle Sam drops you in the middle of Libya on the 8th and then on the 9th says, turn in your BlackBerry, don't call us. This puts a lot of people in a very uncomfortable position, doesn't it?
It sure does. Steve and I were just talking about, you know, all the tiny little situations, thousands, I'm sure, that are going to arise because of this, where, you know, people are going to, I can imagine the general counsel's offices across the country at federal agencies are just going to be working nonstop. But it's a great question. OPM is quite clear in their guidance that you cannot, if you're not an accepted employee, you cannot work as a federal employee. You still are a federal employee. You're legally an employee of the federal government, but you cannot work as a federal employee. And so, you know, it's always dangerous to put on your general counsel
sure.
hat, but that's what I'm going to do.
Yes.
But first of all, the person should consult with their general counsel's office or OPM. But my guess is, from the OPM rules, it's pretty clear that a federal employee who is not accepted cannot do any work, and that means present a paper on behalf of the government or present a paper that was done on government time. And I imagine a person could still go as a private individual, certainly not representing the government or as a federal employee.
It's really one of those how many angels can dance on the head of a pin
yeah.
kind of thing, and it'll be magnified all over government. Well, we should point out that OPM has done a very good job of keeping people posted about how the furlough would affect them with the rules, regulations, and pay, and they have this 56-page memo, and I know they've updated it, and they have done well. Other parts of the government have been under orders not to do this. You know, it's interesting you raised that thing about the general counsels. This could be wind up with controller general decisions for the next 10 years. Could be fights over this, who spent what. And John Gage, the president of the AFGE, even raised the anti-slavery amendment to the Constitution, and he has gone to the Office of Personnel Management and said, how can you bring employees in who are considered essential or deemed critical or whatever they're going to call them, how can you bring them in without the possibility that they won't be paid?
That's right. And OPM late last night posted an update to their furlough information that said that for the first time definitively answered yes, accepted employees will be paid for the hours they work after Congress passes the appropriation and after President Obama signs, or the CR, and after President Obama signs it. So that clears up. So long story short, the government will not make slaves of accepted employees.
Interesting. But you know, I'm just wondering to add to this, the OPM, in well-intentioned, says they will get paid. But what if Congress says, we're going to consider this a furlough?
I don't see that being in the cards. It's
okay.
Interesting. We actually asked Congressman Ross that very question, and he said very definitively, accepted employees will be paid. And that's coming from someone who...
Yeah, he would know.
Yeah, and as far as furloughed employees, that's anyone's guess.
Well, and that's, you know, that brings up another problem, a morale and personal thing. But the two Steves are in the office, and management says, Steve Watkins, editor, you're essential. You stay. Steve Losey, senior writer, you're not essential. Go home. You too. That might split up your carpool.
A little bit, there can definitely be hurt feelings in that situation. So I would not be surprised if nerves start to get frayed, if stress and conflict starts to erupt in federal offices because of these decisions that are made.
Is there a drop dead deadline? Somebody here mentioned that there was some kind of a 72-hour window that the House Republicans wanted to have so that the actual shutdown date wasn't midnight April 8th, but it's actually a couple of days before that, and here we are at Wednesday.
Yeah, a lot of people said yesterday was the key date for a deal for that reason, that the House has a rule that they enacted with the new Congress that all legislation needs to be available for 72 hours before a vote so that everyone has a chance to read it. That said, Congress is well known for breaking all its own rules, and it does so regularly. So I don't think that's really a big hamper here. The other thing that I thought was interesting that I heard, I read a number of blogs on this, and one by Stan Collender, who's a noted budget expert. He was pointing out that, okay, let's say there is a shutdown after Friday. Over the weekend, most people aren't going to notice it, except all those tourists coming to Washington, D.C., trying to go into see an IMAX movie at the Smithsonian. But the real deadline is going to be Monday in terms of whether government's back open or not. So there's some possibility that, you know, there could still be a deal late this week that could make sure government offices are open on Monday. But you know, who's to say? It really depends on what you read, who you read, and that sort of thing. You know, a good phrase that I've heard recently is a lot of people are talking and they don't know anything, and a lot of people who know things aren't talking. So that's kind of what we're in. But there are reports that, you know, there are private talks between Reid and Boehner, which they occurred after the meeting at the White House yesterday, and the reports there were somewhat positive, that the tone of the discussions had changed markedly, that it was not quite the partisan bickering that we heard more publicly. And I'm still hopeful and optimistic that they're going to strike a deal and open government offices if there is a shutdown, that it would last just for the weekend. So we'll see.
But you've been watching this as closely as anybody. This really is with the timing. This is the classic Washington Monument cut, where they shut down the government over the weekend. It's full of tourists, kids here from spring break and their Washington tours, and tourists in for the cherry blossom by the millions. And suddenly, all the museums are closed. All of the federal operations are closed. The Congress could hear about that on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, maybe a very short shutdown, like over the weekend or maybe lasting a few days, might in some way be beneficial, just because it will essentially wake up the public. I think they'll see all the offices that they rely on, of federal services and websites and so forth. The key thing here is whatever happens with this, and I think it will be wrapped up very shortly, but it's a very negative indicator of what we're in for in just a few weeks. We've got a debt ceiling extension debate that's coming, and we've got a 2012 budget plan and perhaps a multi-year budget plan that really needs to be struck at some point. And that's where the really big issues are going to be coming up.
Well, I urge people, too, to check your website, federaltimes.com, because you've got some really interesting stories, including one that happens every time about this time of year. The Treasury may borrow federal retirement funds in debt emergency. That always makes annuitants uneasy, and people worry about what's going to happen to the thrift savings plan of investments. And it's an annual thing, but it's very serious.
That's right. Yeah, the G Fund and the Civil Service Retirement Fund that the Treasury manages, If the debt ceiling is not extended, Treasury Secretary Geithner is saying May 19th is the key date there. Treasury may have to dip into those funds, but it promises to make them whole, and no one would be affected unless there's a prolonged impasse there, which would create far bigger problems than just someone's retirement annuity.